This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon, and it's our last show of the season. Naz won't be joining us until later on in the hour, so look forward to closing the show with Naz. We're going to be taking our summer break after today, and wow, it's going to be a fantastic afternoon of golf up at TPC Osprey. Been there for the last couple of days. Seven Canadians within seven strokes of the lead, four Canadians within four strokes of the lead, and an Italian is leading. We'll have John Steinbrenner and Sean Clement talking about that, but now we're going to talk about the Stanley Cup Finals. We're pleased to welcome to the show Leaping Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you?
Morning, Wally. I'm real good. Thank you. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Thank you. And also joining us this morning from Edmonton, Alberta, the ultimate Leafs fan, Mike Wilson. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Doing well.
Thanks
for sitting here. It's a little early, but very well. The sun is shining here, so hopefully it's a good day.
Well, thanks for getting up early, Mike. We appreciate it. I know you were at the game. You were at the game Friday night, man. This is, for lack of a better term, this is turning into a war between Edmonton and Florida. Perhaps that's an adjective people don't like to use anymore. So let's call it an incredibly competitive series. First two games in overtime, man, if they keep going like this, Mike, there's going to be some awfully beat up and tired players by the end of the series. But just tell us about the atmosphere in Edmonton Friday night.
Well, I went last year. Actually, one of my former teammates, Jeff Green, is out here, and he invited me last year, and I brought them luck because I went to game four when they turned around, so he brought me out this year. And the city's electric. Everybody, you know, there's, you know, the orange and blue everywhere. It's all Oiler talk. The rink was just, you know, deafening. It was so loud. And the costumes they wear, they're just into it. The national anthem was awesome, as you heard, when the crowd sings it. And just, it's just like, it's what hockey's all about. And it's such a Canadian event. And it's so proud, you know, for us Canadians to be witnessing this. It was just a phenomenal atmosphere, and anybody ever gets an opportunity to come should definitely make the trip.
Oh, no question. Lou, you know, you fought some pretty tough playoff battles in your days with the Washington Capitals, had to take on some pretty tough New York Islander teams at times. Your sense from being in playoff battles, how are these players feeling right now?
Well, they should be a little bit sore. They should be a little bit banged up. At this time of year, whether you're in the playoffs or not, after going through 82 games during the season and the travel and obviously the third round, you know, the bodies are going to be hurting. But at the end of the day, they know what stands in front of them at the end of the tunnel. And sometimes you more or less you put everything behind you and let everything go. You know, I loved the first two games that were played. That was old-time hockey in my book. A lot of pushing, a lot of shoving, a lot of sticks under the neck, a lot of slapping people in the head, a lot of running the goalies or more or less being bumped into the goalie like Mr. Bennett. But at the end of the day, it's very, very entertaining. I think I said earlier at one of our earlier times that we were on that both these teams are a lot better than they were last year, and Edmonton I think felt what Florida went through last year by winning it in game seven, and they know what it's going to take. So it's going to be a great battle right till the end. Whether they win it in five, six, or seven, I think the fans are going to get their money's worth, and it's going to be a very, very entertaining series.
Mike, your reaction to the first two games, two overtime games, Last one in double overtime. The Rat scores to win it. Marshawn wins it. You know, the last game, I mean, you can't, you know, you look at the statistics on these two games, and especially the game two. I mean, these teams are so incredibly evenly matched in terms of, you know, especially game two, shots on goal, you know, goal opportunities, possession, and two different, completely different styles of teams in so many different ways. You know, the Oilers have like two of the top three players in the world. But the Florida Panthers, they just come at you and they come at you and they play their system. It's just from style-wise and where this series is going, it's just, you know, as Steve Simmons said, this is pretty memorable. Such an incredibly balanced Stanley Cup final so far, only past game two, and two different styles of teams. It's just compelling theater in so many ways, Mike.
Well, you know, the funny part, of course, is the Leaf-centric broadcast, so at some point we have to twist it back to the Leafs.
Yeah, we will. Don't worry.
Comment, but, you know, the Oilers the other night, and we sat at the end to watch the play coming at us, but it was very reminiscent to Toronto a couple of years ago playing Florida. And, of course, Jeff and I were having many discussions throughout the game about all of this. The Oilers, and you know how aggressive Florida is on the forecheck. They pinch on the half wall aggressively more than you ever see any team. They're on you like instantly. They finish their checks. All the things you're supposed to know, all the things Lou pointed out at the beginning of the game. But what's driving me crazy with Edmonton, now they tell me this has been working all year for them, is this stretch pass, which absolutely just killed the Leafs against Florida. And Florida was doing the same thing. Now, the first period the other night, the Oilers were having some success, took the game and pushed the game up the ice towards Florida, and they were having some success. But in the second period, it's almost like the Leafs all over again. They just sat back. They started panicking a little bit in their own end. They started those stretch passes. Florida knew they were coming, and they were stepping in front of them, intercepting and breaking those plays up in the neutral zone all period. But somehow, you know, Edmonton found a way to hang around, kept it within a shot on goal, and, you know, they took it right down to the end. But I just can't believe that they're going to not adjust at some point. And, you know, the coaching staff, well, I'm sure, is a lot smarter than I am, but they will pick up on that. And they've got to, if they can find a way to push a little quicker out of their own zone instead of trying to do that two-line pass, you know, they could have some success. But as I said, they hung around despite doing that. But it was almost like they switched uniforms. I go, am I watching Toronto in here? Because that's how Toronto tried to play against Florida 2 years ago, and it didn't work. But somehow they found a way to tie it up at the end and lost in overtime.
Yeah, certainly. And as I've said the last couple of weeks, if you're going to solve this Florida Panther team, you got to get the puck out of your own zone quick. Like, it's just got to, and, you know, you got to help your defense out. And if Florida is able to establish their forecheck game, that makes it pretty tough on the other team. Lou?
Well, you know, that's what the game is all about. You try to get the puck in deep, and you try to put as much pressure on the defensive team as possible, because sooner or later, the more tired you get, you're going to end up making mistakes. But what I don't understand, and this is going to be a telling tale, like how can a team survive on two players carrying this team? Like, they can't expect Dreisaitl and McDavid to keep doing this, because Florida's, they can go four deep on you. They got four lines that you can put out there with any line other than, obviously, the Dreisaitl line against Edmonton. But, you know, Mike made a good point on the stretch pass there. Again, I don't know why Edmonton doesn't take, you know, you see Dreisaitl and you see McDavid wind up without the puck in their zone, and they end up getting it about 5 feet inside their blue line. So by the time they're at center ice, they're flying. So I don't know why Edmonton doesn't take that away, just like the minor adjustments that Edmonton has to make on Florida's forecheck.
Yeah, I'm going to respectfully disagree, Lou. I think Edmonton's success through these playoffs, obviously, when you got McDavid and Dreisaitl and, you know, Knobloch's, quite often now putting them on the same line, he's double loading them. which has worked quite a bit during the playoffs. But a lot of the other Edmonton guys have stepped up. You may look at a guy like Corey Perry. I don't know how many playoff goals he's got, but I think he's up to 7 or 8. 17 seconds left in the game the other night. Evander Kane. You look through that entire Edmonton lineup, and a lot of those guys have pitched in. But certainly the team revolves around McDavid and Draisaitl. I don't disagree with you there. Your reaction, we're basically a dead heat right now, Mike. If you see either of these two teams making adjustments when they head to Florida, does either of these two teams have to make any adjustments? Mike?
Yeah, okay, yeah, you broke up there, Ed. You wanted my reaction to...
Are you still there, Mike?
Yeah.
Let me rephrase it again. I'll try it again. So far, these teams are a dead heat. Do you see either team, either coach, trying to do anything differently when they go back to Florida?
Well, as I just said in the previous comment, I think Edmonton has to change, especially moving into the Florida building where they have last change. And the one thing that was clearly evident is Lou pointed out with the two-man operation with Draisaitl and McCabe. And I mean, no question the ice tilts when they're on the ice. But the fact that it remains, Florida's basically lining four guys up across the blue line and waiting for them to come at him. And I actually saw that one time when McDavid just got laid out. To go between, but the fact remains, I think Florida will turn the heat up even more at home using that last change to revenge. But again, as has been pointed out, all four lines play the same way, and they're just going to bring it even heavier because they can smell blood. They're getting under Edmonton's skin, and Edmonton, what they have to do is stop reacting to the nonsense. Forget about the sticks between the legs, and the grabbing the stick after the whistle and the face washes. Once they start doing all that, and then they're looking at the referees, looking for a call, you're not going to get it. And they're just going to keep coming at you that way. So ignore it. Tkachuk's not going to fight. He's going to drop his, he's going to chirp and yell and do nothing. They know that here. Marchand, you just leave him alone, let him do this. He's not going to fight you either. Bennett's not going to fight you. These guys won't fight, but they're just going to do all the other thing and hide behind the referee and chirp at you. So ignore it. And with the crowd behind them, they're going to go even crazier in Florida. But I think Edmonton, they've got to find a way to push that puck up the ice without relying on that long stretch pass. And if they can do that, they're going to make a series of it. And they can steal one in Florida, which I think they're really capable of doing, especially with the two guys who mentioned at the top of this. This is going to be a heck of a series, as we've seen already.
Lou, the one Florida player that keeps pushing the envelope, for lack of a better term, Sam Bennett. Got himself in the thick of it the other night. Interesting fall into Stuart Skinner. I guess that's, you got to give Sam Bennett credit. I mean, he knows where the line is. And he seems to be able to stay on the side of the line that doesn't get him in trouble. It's when you do that to goaltenders, my reaction to it, not being a Florida, and I mean, a lot of it depends which way you're looking. If you're an Edmonton fan, he's playing dirty. If you're a Florida fan, he's just playing aggressive. Your reaction is, I'm sure you saw it. He got pushed and he sort of fell a little bit more backwards than perhaps he necessarily needed to. Your reaction to that?
I don't have any reaction at all. Sam Bennett is a heck of a hockey player. He's probably made himself a lot of money in the playoffs. People are talking maybe he might get $7 to $8 million. I'm looking at probably anywhere from $8 to $10 million next year. Because of the contract that he's going to get. And again, Edmonton's got Corey Perry. They got Evander Kane. So they're doing the same thing to Bobrovsky that Bennett is doing. It's just that Bennett has had farther better success. I think he's got 13 goals, 12 goals on the road right now. He's the leading goal scorer in the playoffs. So Sam Bennett has done it forever. Corey Perry has done it forever too. And gotten under people's skin, gotten under the goalie's skin. And obviously Evander Kane was being a non-factor last year because he was injured. I think he adds another dimension to the Edmonton Oilers that they never had last year. So they both know that they have to get under each other's skin. And the first team that's going to flinch is going to get the advantage. But right now, they're going head-to-head. Both teams are instigating. Both teams are backing off in certain areas. And they know, because the referees have probably informed them, guys, we don't want any shenanigans. If you look at the last game, I think there was a couple of minor penalties called earlier to tell the players, listen, guys, we don't mind you doing that stuff. Let's play hockey, because we don't want to be here 4 or 5 hours in the night with all this stuff going on.
Mike, the NHL professes that they're out to protect their goalies. Are they doing a good enough job?
Well, you know, I mean, that's a debatable question. During the regular season, it appears they do, but in the playoffs, it seems to be, I mean, let's face it, the game is about entertainment, the game's about selling viewership, and the game is about expanding the game worldwide, and what better way to do than have controversy? Then it's more purportable. I mean, no, honestly.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
People don't talk about this. Yeah. I mean, again, you know, if you want to get into the real conspiracy theories, do you have to sell the game in Edmonton? No. Do you have to sell the game in Toronto? No. Do you have to sell the game in Florida? You're damn right you do. Because when this team slips back into, you know, out of a playoff spot in 5 or 6 years, they'll be getting 10,000 people in the building again. So, you know, you have to sell the game hard, and Bennett's 4-for-4 now. I mean, would any other player get away with that? I mean, that's 4 goalies in 4 series he's tried to take out. And he was successful on two of them and hurt another one, and he went after Skinner the other night. But you know what? If they're going to stretch the rules and let him do it, why wouldn't he? And he's got, as Lou pointed, he's got 13 goals. And he's been, and that, well, what makes it even worse is he's producing. He won't fight. He hides behind the referee. He's going after the goalies, and he's scoring. So he is just an absolute trifecta dynamic, you know, pest that's killing them. And you know what? If they let him do it, I'll tell you what, he's going to be up in the running for the Conn Smythe.
I couldn't have put it better, Mike. He's a trifecta. I mean, got to give him a lot of credit in the world. He's a guy who, you know, this guy's built for the playoffs, Lou. He doesn't normally score more than 40, 50 points a year, but come playoff time, man, he's a force out there. He's got a package of tools, some of which are borderline, and he's figured out how to use them. And somebody's going to pay him a lot of money next year. Lou?
Well, he was a top 5 pick in the draft. Yeah. So you knew he had something in him from playing junior. I don't know why Calgary got rid of him. But he's your typical player. You look at Marshawn. Marshawn's no taller than, what, 5'8", 5'9"? And whenever the playoff comes, it's almost like a switch turns on and say, boys, this is my time of year. And you know what? They do all the little things that it takes a team to win. And that is the bottom line. Everybody hates to lose, but the better players, sometimes they don't know what it takes because they have so much talent and skill, where other players have the other dimensions that might not be as good as flash in the pan, but at the end of the day, they stand out a lot more than your Nylanders, your Marners, your Tavares, and your Matthews.
Anyways, let's be a good segue now to the Toronto Maple Leaf situation. Mike, you know, it's been a few weeks now. The Marner discussion is obviously still ongoing. I don't know where the betting money is, if you can place a bet on any of the betting sites, but if I was to guess, if there were odds on Marner staying or leaving, I would guess that the odds are probably better that he's leaving. And then Tree Living's got, a whole bunch of other decisions to make. First of all, let's talk about Marner. Your thoughts on where he's going to end up?
I'm back on. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Kind of breaking up. The thing with Marner is, listen, here's the thing I've debated with watching this kid play for the last number of years. The sample size is big enough that you can make a decision on him. But here's a question for you. Who drives that line? Is it him? Meaning that is Matthews that a benefactor of his creative playmaking? Or is it you know, Matthews, you know, or is him, you know, a benefactor of Matthews' ability to finish. And because it's not coincidental that both players yep. seem to drop their play when the playoffs come along and their production drops. So the thing is if Marner needs a change and Matthews in is now has the responsibility to drive a line, John Tavares has done it his whole career. He's made ordinary players into 25 and 30 goal scorers. So maybe it's that time for Matthews to step up and take the bull by the horns and do that himself. So this may be a good transition for Matthews to take his game to the next level. Because as we've talked about in the past, the difference between good, great, and elite is very significant, especially between great and elite. And that's why there's so few elite players. So based on that, I think a change of scenery is good for both teams. The word DNA is being thrown around a lot. Well, does that mean it's a Kawhi type moment for you know, tree leaving as a burst on Matt Smith, he did with the Raptors? And now it's his first time to have the team under his own rule, to making his own decisions, not answering to somebody else that was there before him making those decisions. So I suspect 16 will be playing somewhere else next year.
Lou?
I definitely think he's going to be somewhere else next year. I can't see with everything that's going on, with all the comments that were made, that he will be coming back. And to the team that he goes to, it depends on which Mitch Marner you're looking at. Are you looking at a Mitch Marner that wants a win? Or are you going to look at a Mitch Marner that wants to be the highest paid player? And obviously we've had this discussion here that he was not willing to take less money to help the team win earlier on in his contract, previous to this one. He just wanted to be the top player on the hockey team. So I really don't know what teams are there. There's a lot of possibilities out there. Does he want to play with Bedard? Does he want to go to Buffalo that'd be close to home? Now that he's a new proud papa, I guess that was one of the excuses that he used, that he vetoed the deal to Carolina. So, you know what, it's going to be an open bag of tricks, so to speak, with Mitch to find out where he's going to go. But I definitely think he won't be back.
Mike, any other areas?
Well, you know, Wally, what I would say to that is, what you have to remember is 16 teams miss the playoffs every year. And of those 16 teams, there's probably eight. Look at the NHL. That's why it's the best professional league in North America, parity-wise, is because eight of those teams were within a few points of making the playoffs. Look at Detroit the last couple years. They're probably within 3 points 2 years in a row, 1 point last year, and a couple points this year. Mitch Marner is an elite player during a regular season that can move the needle to put a team in the playoffs. So that's what you have to remember. Whatever he does after that won't matter to those teams at this time because they're just trying to get in. They want those playoff gates. They want to keep management happy. They want to keep the fans happy. And he's the guy that can move the needle to that level and put them there.
I couldn't agree with you more.
And that to me, that is why he's going to have at least a dozen teams bidding for him.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Mike. And we tend to sometimes forget it's not easy to make the playoffs. And just because you made it last year doesn't mean you're going to make it next year. And you got to fight injuries. You got to fight goaltending issues at times. You know, look what happened to the New York Rangers this year and the Boston Bruins. You know, we knock on wood. We don't hope that, but you know, playoffs are not guaranteed. It's a struggle to make the playoffs, and you got a lot of teams that are biting to make their way up. So, you know, for a lot of those teams that may be 3, 4, 5 points out of a playoff spot, or you know, 3, 4, 5 points in a playoff spot, you know, Mitch Marner fulfills a valuable role on a lot of those teams. So I think there's going to be a lot of interest in Mitch, Lou, and it's probably going to be for a good number.
You're absolutely right. There will be a lot of teams because if you're not in it to win, I don't know why you're in it at all. And one team that could be a dark horse out there could be Pittsburgh. You know, they've got certain decisions that they've got to make with Malkin and Carlson. But imagine if they put him on a line with Crosby or even Malkin and the team that you have there. So and Pittsburgh has obviously the last 3 years they haven't made the playoffs. Mitch will make a difference to the team he goes to. It's just a matter of, is he going to make a difference to win the cup, or is he going to be the difference to more or less just make it into the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Mike, we're going to let you go. We're going to thank you. And I know you're continuing to do some fantastic work raising money for Alzheimer's, and I know you've got a lot of good work going on, you know, with your partner Deb. You tell us how our listeners can help.
Well, you can. I mean, for the ALS Super Fund, for Mark Curtin, which he's behind, and we're helping support that. We're running a raffle right now with 8 fantastic game day packages to various NHL cities for any game next year, if it's available. Most of them will, and these NHL guys are great at bending over to help people make these things work. So all you have to do is reach out to us at ultimateleafsfan.com. Raffle tickets are $20, and with the raffle ticket, you get one of my books, Inside the Room or Beer League, $20, guys, for to help a fantastic cause, and you got a chance to win a fantastic prize. Please, I'm begging people, not asking, begging them to reach out to us. We want to sell 2,500 books or raffle tickets. We're through 1,500. Help us push this over the line and help this dreaded disease come to an end at some point.
Mike, on my behalf, on Nez's behalf, on Lou's behalf, and on our listeners' behalf, thanks so much for your outstanding work. Thanks to Deb. You provide a lot of valuable contributions to the community in a lot of different ways, and we can't thank you enough for that, and we can't thank you enough for your contributions, as always, to our show. And Mike, it's our last show of the season. We'll catch up with you next fall.
Yeah, thanks for having me on all the time and putting up with me, and I really appreciate it. And you guys are running a great show, and I'm looking forward to again next year.
Let's do it. Mike Wilson, the Ultimate Leafs fan. Thanks, Mike. We're going to take it to break. We've got this incredible Canadian Open of Golf happening at TPC Osprey in Caledon, and we're going to bring back our golf guy. I call him, he's wisdom in golf, Sean Clement, and we're going to talk some golf.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville introduced the New York-style cup and char pepperoni pizza. It comes with our signature thin crust, mozzarella and parmesan cheese, and our new cup and char pepperoni.
You guys will love this New York-style cup and char pepperoni pizza so much, it'll bring out your inner New Yorker. Hey, same to you, buddy!
Call Pizzaville at 736-3636.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
Anyone can sell you a rookie card in mint condition, but only Mint Inc. turns a purchase into an experience. Do you want more sports cards and Pokemon? Check out the Mint Inc. trading cards and live experience in Vaughan. At almost 3,000 square feet and with a live studio and event space, Mint Inc.'s headquarters is where you, the collector, can meet your heroes. Open 7 days a week. Details at mintink.ca.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise. Understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
MDF Mechanical has something in common with the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. A full-service mechanical company to building owners and developers in the GTA, we've been installing and servicing electrical, plumbing, and HVAC systems since 1986. And sometimes, Naz accuses Wally of blowing his own hot air. When we're not serving customers, the winning team at MDF Mechanical is listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour every Sunday along with you. So, let's enjoy the rest of the show. From one superfan to another.
You name it, they'll argue about it. No sport left unturned. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. I'm absolutely thrilled to welcome back to the show our good friend, one of the world's great golf teachers, wisdom in golf's Sean Clement. Sean, how are you this morning?
Dudes, how are you?
We're doing fantastic, Sean. Every time I get you on the line, it brings a big smile to my face because you know what we get to talk about? We get to talk about one of my passions, one of your passions, golf. And there's this amazing tournament going on up at TPC Osprey. Been there the last couple of days. It's going to be a wild afternoon of golf this afternoon, Sean. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Can you believe what's going on, man? We got seven Canadians within five shots.
Yeah.
Six of them within four. And the front runners are not used to being there. So we got seven chances at winning this championship. And if you're Canadian, this is like the greatest tournament of the year right here, right now. And, you know, we've got a beautiful day here in Quebec City. I hope it's the same for you guys in Toronto. Oh. Man, it's barbecue time with that freaking TV screen. Let's go.
Yeah, there's another competing interest here. I mean, obviously, I've got Hughes, Hadwin, Pendrith, Taylor, Richard Lee, Ben Silverman, Corey Connors, and Matthew Anderson. So I'm cheering for all of those guys. But if one of those guys doesn't win, then they got this kid, Matteo Manassero, and I don't know if you, Sean, if you know this, but I'm of Italian heritage. Lou Franceschetti is of Italian heritage. Naz Marchese is of Italian heritage. So if the Canadians don't win, we're going to be cheering on our fellow Italian. He's a remarkable story too.
He's reborn.
Yeah, here's a kid who came up and was setting all kinds of records when he was 16 years old. The youngest player ever to have played in the Masters at that time, and that's since been that record's since been changed. And then his career sort of went on hiatus, and he wouldn't say he disappeared, but from North America he did. And I actually followed him around a bit yesterday, you know, walking around. And what a story it would be if he won. But like I said, I want the Canadians to win first. So let's break down the Canadians, Sean. Go ahead.
I was looking at the stats. Every one of them finished so strong yesterday. I mean, the Taylor Pendrith eagle was unbelievable. He uncorked a 363-yard drive. Had a mid iron into the green, and made an easy eagle out of it. And then same for Mackenzie Hughes. Adam Hadwin was on fire yesterday. Shot a 65. And Nick Taylor kind of cruised. You know, he didn't gain any ground. He just shot like an even par round of golf. But he's a closer, man. So I'm looking, for me, my money's on Nick Taylor or Taylor Pendrith today.
Yeah. Two pretty good choices. Two very good choices. Lou?
Hey, Sean. Nick Taylor almost had an albatross yesterday.
On 18.
On 18. Incredible, isn't it? I think there's a few inches on that second bounce. That would have probably made it really interesting. But you know what? I am always, as much as I am Canadian, I'm always Italian first. So Manassero will be on my top of the list. I always like the underdog. In a tournament like this, and obviously with him being in that position, he probably is never accustomed to it, where our boys are used to playing on a regular basis here and fighting it out almost every single week to be the top. But it's great to see the amount of talent that we have up on the board right now. And I think, what is it, 15 players are within three strokes of the lead. So any lead is going to change on every hole.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a nail-biter throughout the whole day. You know, I think Manassero has low expectations. That's his advantage. All the Canadians want it bad. So, you know, if they strain too much, or if they put too much importance on it, that's going to be a detriment to their freedom as they go through the day. So, and then you've got the New Zealander, which I'm a big fan of. I mean, he's a huge hitter, Ryan Fox, and he's won some big stage events. He's got a really good chance of pulling it off today. But, you know, he's had a reputation of kind of stagnating, you know, kind of you know, he doesn't put a big score in to win. He just lets everybody else kind of wither off. So I think it's, you know, he may be in the mix between, it would be realistically between him and Nick Taylor. But Manassero could easily sneak in there because, I mean, he's a reborn guy. I mean, he's got new wind in his sails. I remember at the time he was considered a very short hitter. And it was amazing that he was able to do what he did from being such a short hitter. And if you look at this year at the Mexico Open, you had the shortest player in the field beat the longest player in the field for that event. It could happen again today.
Yeah, it certainly could.
Because he's been so accurate with his irons and his, you know, everything's on point. And when a guy like that is playing out of his mind, just, you know, get out of his way and he'll do great.
Maybe he just came to a location where he found some good Italian food, which Toronto is known for. Pasta's good here. Hey, listen, if he wins, I'm gonna make it a point to ask him a question at the press conference. I may even bring out some of my Italian. Well, we'll see what happens.
Caledon is like on the north end of Udebrecht.
Anyways, we're thrilled to see Manassero, but obviously my loyalty is to the red and white. So many great Canadian golfers in this generation. It's really, you know, Canadian golf, Sean, just keeps getting better and better and better. And, you know, and now it's not just guys who are in the field. You've got a slew of Canadian golfers that have won on the PGA Tour, and have won under difficult conditions, have competed in majors. So this is a golden era. I mean, all the work that Golf Canada has been doing, both is on the women's side as well. Our women golfers compete with the best in the world as well. But on the men's side, man, in our lifetimes, I've never seen this many Canadians who can play at such an elite level.
I completely agree. I mean, just a couple of years ago, you'd think maybe a couple of them will fall off the side, but none of them have. They keep showing up year after year, and all in the top 50, and playing in beautiful events, you know. And they're showing up. I mean, they're showing up for Canada right now. It's just fabulous.
Yeah, it certainly is, Lou.
You know, you guys are absolutely right. I think the game of golf has evolved into an unbelievable sport right now. And you look at almost every week, other than maybe when Sheffield's when Scheffler's playing, it's almost like a crapshoot. Anybody can win it. And I feel for Mike Weir sometimes because he got such a difficult decision to pick the president's team. And then you look at the Ryder Cup coming up in the fall. You know, you look at the players that have come through in the last couple of years, like Dietrich, Åberg, Manassero, all the players that are going to be reloading on the European side. And then you look at on the American side, all the young kids that are coming up through the ranks there. So I think golf and is going to be in a great state over the next couple of maybe 10, 15 years.
Amen to that, man. Amen to that. It's, you know, I'm... It really is a more exciting time than ever for the PGA Tour, and it's really cool to see.
Yeah, it certainly is, and you know, the PGA Tour, the live stuff has sort of died down. Nobody on this side really pays, as far as I can tell, pays any attention to those guys at all, and. You know, they may be making a lot of money, but they're really off the golf radar screen until there's a major championship and they have to compete. It's like it's like nobody really talks about LIV all that much anymore. The PGA Tour, we're sort of entering what I call the post-Tiger era. You know, we're sort of waiting. Not waiting, but the talent of today is bubbling to the top, and you know it's the post Tiger era, and you know, and one of those guys in the post Tiger era that has been the face of golf didn't do too well this weekend. Rory McIlroy had a quadruple on Friday. I think it was the fourth or the fifth hole. I can't remember. He just had a horror, you know, in his by his standards, let's put it that way, didn't have a great tournament in Toronto. Anything you saw there, just mental fatigue, just it was un-Rory-like, Sean.
Well, I think it's there's something behind the scenes that's pulling at his heartstrings or weighing heavily on his mind, because a top performer like that is not going to go off the deep end in that fashion without something like that. So I hope everything's okay in his personal life and that he recovers quickly from that, because that is very uncharacteristic. And there's so much more that goes on behind the scenes that we are not completely privy to.
Yeah, that's, you forget these guys are human beings, and you're absolutely right. Exactly. You don't know, at the memorial, he skipped, if, correct me if I'm wrong, but he didn't go to the memorial this year.
Yeah, and he got ragged on by Jack on that one.
Yeah,
let him come to the Canadian, he can't play everywhere.
Yeah. And Rory's, he's won here a couple of times, and, it's in the American golf world, if you're one of the top players in the world, you're expected to go to Jack's tournament, and he didn't for whatever reason. And I think that was a sign of some kind. We'll see how he recovers at Oakmont next week. Oakmont's not and when you put Oakmont in U.S. Open conditions, and we're going to be talking to John Steinbrenner about that. Yeah. It's not an easy course. And talking about courses, what's your reaction to TPC Osprey? I it's the North Course up there. There's three courses up there. My initial reaction when they awarded it to TPC, I don't know. It's a course that high handicappers or mid handicappers like me play on Saturday and Sundays. I had my concerns how it would hold up to the pros, but walked the course for the last couple of days. It looks fantastic, and I think it's truly of a good enough caliber to do our National Open proud.
Absolutely, I think it's the perfect venue. I mean, just logistically, and it's sprawling. I mean, they've got three courses there. If I'm correct,
they got three courses there. Yep.
You had the Hoot, the Toot, and the Highlands.
Yep.
And I remember playing it, and I loved it. I mean, the atmosphere is terrific. The range is gorgeous. I thought it was a real good fit for TPC Toronto, right? And I think it'll do really well in the future. And there's so much that you can do with that facility, So to keep things interesting.
Yeah, no, and I thought it would be a bigger nightmare from a logistics point of view, getting people in and out of there. But, I haven't had that much difficulty. I mean, you're going to get traffic. There's no question. But I thought it would be a nightmare. But the good people at Golf Canada, I pat them on the back. They've done an incredible job. I mean, it's first time ever up there. So you're going to get, getting people in and out of a golf course is not the easiest thing to do. And I thought they've done a pretty remarkable job from a logistics point of view. So I compliment all the great people at Golf Canada, and I thank them for taking care of Naz and I. And we love chatting golf. Sean, we're going to let you go. It's our last show of the season. We always thank you. You've been a big part of our show for 11 years, and my opportunity.
That long, man.
Yeah, it's been 11 years, buddy. Do you remember?
Wow.
Yeah, when we started this show, I was still coming. You were still working on my game up at the Richmond Hill Golf and Country Club.
That's it.
I miss those days, Sean. Next time I see you, you're gonna have to see if you can rejig my game a little bit. So,
big time, man! Come on over to Quebec City at the Royal. The Royal Quebec is such an incredible facility. It's probably the nicest practice facility in Canada, and it's just a brilliant place, a bucket list place to come and visit and play golf.
Thanks so much, Sean Clement.
Sean,
go ahead, Luke. Sorry.
Let's not forget a young kid coming up through the ranks right now. His name is Charlie Woods. which will make this a lot more interesting.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Absolutely. You guys have a great summer, man.
Thanks, Sean. Sean Clement. Before we go to break, I just want to remind the our listeners, the fantastic people at Pizzaville still have their Charlie's Treats special going on in honor of their beloved furry friend Charlie, who passed away last fall. In honoring him, they're doing a special at Pizzaville. You can go in and buy bite-sized pieces of white chicken breast for your dog. All proceeds donated to Humane Society and the SPCA. Thanks to the fantastic people at Pizzaville who make incredibly valuable contributions to our community. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville introduced the New York-style cup and char pepperoni pizza. Start spreading the news! It comes with our signature thin crust, mozzarella and parmesan cheese, and our new cup and char pepperoni. You'll be king of the hill! A number one! Call Pizzaville for the... New York-style cup and char pepperoni pizza at 736-3636.
Anyone can sell you a rookie card in mint condition, but only Mint Ink turns a purchase into an experience. Do you want more sports cards and Pokemon? Check out the Mint Ink trading cards and live experience in Vaughan. At almost 3,000 square feet and with a live studio and event space, Mint Ink's headquarters is where you, the collector, can meet your heroes. Open 7 days a week. Details at mintink.ca.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
MDF Mechanical has something in common with the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. A full-service mechanical company to building owners and developers in the GTA, we've been installing and servicing electrical, plumbing, and HVAC systems since 1986. And sometimes, Naz accuses Wally of blowing his own hot air. When we're not serving customers, the winning team at MDF Mechanical is listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour every Sunday along with you. So, let's enjoy the rest of the show. From one superfan to another. Opinions expressed on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. We're thrilled to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour our good friend, the managing editor at Global Golf Post, John Steinbreder. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks so much. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, John. We got you on a week early this year. We normally have you on Father's Day, and it's normally U.S. Open Sunday. We're taking our summer break a week early for all kinds of different reasons, but this is our last show of the season, so we couldn't let the summer go by without speaking with you before we went off the air, and it's always a tradition that we've had, you on a major championship Sunday. Unfortunately, this year we can't make it happen on the actual Sunday, but we're going to make it happen a week early. So thanks so much for joining us. And I don't know if you know, but it's Canadian Open this weekend, and it's just outside of Toronto. And it's the afternoon of golf we're going to have is just going to be out of this world. We've got seven Canadians within striking distance of the lead. And if a Canadian breaks through again like Nick Taylor did a couple of years ago, it's going to be bedlam up in up at TPC Osprey, John.
That's great. Well, I still remember Nick's finish there in that putt and that, you know, that whole scene in the 18th green when that happened a couple of years ago. I loved that. It was exciting, and I'm glad you've got so many in the mix, and I hope a Canadian comes out, although I understand Mateo Manassero is in the mix as well, and he's a kid I wrote about at Augusta years ago when he was really a kid. He'd won the British Amateur, and he's someone I've followed a lot of years. He's had his downs and he's had his ups, and it's nice to see him on the rebound as well. He's a great kid, and it's good to see him do well.
I'm totally unaware of your connection with Mateo Manassero, and I have to follow up on that before we move over to Oakmont. But interesting part about Mateo Manassero, I don't know if you're aware, but there's a huge Italian Canadian population in the Toronto area, which. Myself, Lou Franceschetti, and my co-host Naz Marchese, our parents all came here from Italy after the Second World War. So if a Canadian doesn't win, we're all rooting for Manassero for a lot, aside from the fact that he's an underdog, but we're rooting for him because he's next on my list. But tell me about your interaction with Manassero. I was completely unfamiliar with that.
Well, when he won the British Amateur, and again, my memory is a little bit hazy, but he was an absolute baby. I mean, he was, 16 years old, I think. And then they had Ishikawa was playing that year from Japan. And I believe he made his debut, may have been the first year that Rory played there as well. So they had the three of them together, three internationals, I believe. And, anyway, I just remember Mateo being pretty soft-spoken and Rayo hardly even speaking at all, and I'm sure there was a language issue for him. But, and Manassero did very well in the beginning, and then he just absolutely fell off the face of the earth. And no idea why. I mean, he didn't hit the ball a million miles and, kind of got lost over there in the European Tour. And I actually played in 2011 or 12. I played in a pro-am for the Hassan II Trophy with him, and it was at the Palace course in Agadir, and we had a great afternoon of golf together. Actually, it was a morning, and he hit the ball well, but he was still struggling with his game. He wasn't doing much. I followed him over the years. He's a nice young man. He looked like a kid. Again, when I saw him in this Masters interview, it was so funny. There were three of these guys, and I may have Rory wrong. I know Ishikawa was there, and it was either Danny Lee, the New Zealand kid, or Rory, but it was these youngsters, and Rory really overshadowed him because he was, he had the gift of gab and seemed very self-confident and very chatty even back then. But the other guys were all a little bit like deers with their, looking at the headlights. And but I just always liked Mateo. I thought he was a good guy. I lived in southern Switzerland, so which is the Italian-speaking part of that country. And so I sort of gravitated to him in a way similar to you guys in terms of just having that connection with Italy and rooting for him in that regard. And I love to see him doing well, and I think he's one of the good guys out there. And I was pleased to see him doing well at your tournament, but I had no idea of the connection with Canada. That's fantastic.
Yeah, no, we've got a lot of there's a lot of Italians immigrated to the Toronto area after the Second World War. In fact, I remember at one point when I was growing up, Canada was the third largest city containing Italians in the world. We had over a million people living in the Toronto area of Italian heritage. So he's, like I said, if a Canadian doesn't win, I think I'm pulling out my Azzurri sweater, Lou.
My Azzurri sweater is already on, and my Italia hat is on my head already. So, John, with the U.S. Open around the corner at Oakmont and Rory's game, is he going to have to hit the ball a lot better off the tee? Because I know his driving right now is, especially after winning the Masters, hasn't been nowhere near. I know he's getting the distance, but I'm not sure what's happening.
I was talking with some friends last night, and we were talking about this very subject. We have no idea what's going on with Rory right now. Obviously, we have no insight, really, but just looking at it as pretty learned observers of the golf game and the professional game, I have no idea what's going on with him. He just doesn't seem to be playing well at all, and U.S. Open set up, Oakmont in general, I mean, those are not you need to be firing in all cylinders like Scotty is right now, for example. And I don't know what's going on with Rory, and I don't know what's going to happen to him.
Are you aware of what happened to him at the Canadian Open? Has that made news down in the States?
Well, the 78 we talked about?
He missed the cut. I think he was six over. Had a quadruple bogey on Friday on not necessarily a difficult par four. He just didn't seem to be into it at all.
No, and I just don't, you know, I don't know if it's, this is not a case of Danny Willett celebrating for a year and not finding his way out of the pub. I think this may, you know, maybe this was, you know, Rory, you know, finally slayed his white whale, and maybe that's it for a little while. I don't know.
We'll find out.
It's absolutely bizarre, right?
Oakmont's not the type of course you want to come into if your game's not firing on all cylinders. I'll tell you that. And talking about Oakmont, John, I know you've got an article coming out on Monday about the course. Let's chat a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. I've been down there a few times. I've played it a few times. I mean, the membership has got a very masochistic streak in them. They delight in the degree of difficulty on that golf course. I played in an event there once called the Fall Swat, which they run the greens faster than they run them during the Open, which has them up at about 16. And it'll really make you almost physically ill as you stand over a 3-foot putt and you miss it by a hair and it's 6 feet past. I mean, it is an exacting course. It demands accuracy. It demands nerve. You got to be a great putter. You got to keep the ball in the fairway. The rough is brutal. We've had a very, very wet spring all throughout the Northeast where I live and even down into the the area where Oakmont is, the western Pennsylvania area. I'm told that the rough is just thick. It's wet. It's been raining down there, so the course is going to play long, too. So it's going to be as tough as it gets from an Open Championship standpoint. And as I mentioned in this piece of mine, you know, Oakmont used to be kind of an inland links. That's the way Herbert Fones wanted it to be, the man who created it, a steel magnet who created it back in the early 1900s. And basically it became kind of in the early 60s, one of their club leaders, a guy named Fred Brand Jr., read an article that Herbert Warren Wynn had written where he described Oakmont, which is hosting the Open that year, as an ugly old brute. And Brand was quite upset about that and said, why can't we be a beautiful old brute? And with those words, thus started a tree beautification program that lasted, you know, 20 or 30 years, where they were just planting trees like crazy on the golf course. And Bob Ford was telling me, and I write about in the article, the longtime 37-year Oakmont head professional, that they used to have a golf day on Fridays where the green fees are $25 for a guest, and then all that money would go towards buying trees to plant on the golf course.
So they turned what had been an inland links
into a parklands course, and it really changed the character of the golf course. So in 1993, they started cutting down those trees, a very considered program, and by 2016, they were finished with that. They cut down, I think, a total of 15,000 trees, and tried to bring Oakmont back to the course that it once was.
John, we're going to wrap it up. We're going to thank you, as always, for joining us. And God willing, we'll be back again in September, and we'll talk some Ryder Cup. Have a fantastic summer, John.
All right, guys. Thank you for everything. I really enjoy our times together, and good luck on the Canadian Open today, and I hope one of your countrymen pulls it off.
We're heading out there right after the show. Thanks, John. Thanks so much. Guys. I'm thrilled to welcome my co-host, my partner, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
Good. I wanted to give my best to your wife, Mary Lane. I understand she's celebrating a special occasion.
Yeah, it was her 65th birthday.
So that's
Happy birthday, Jerk.
That's remarkable, and we wish her the best. Naz, We're about to take our summer break. We've got a couple of minutes left. A lot of thank yous. I know I want to give you the opportunity. We've been doing this for 11 years. Hopefully we're back, everything, you know, God willing, we're back again in September for our 12th year. We've always joked that we're going to keep doing this until the Leafs win the Stanley Cup. Could be a while yet, but, if the good people at Zoomer want us, we'll come back. Naz, I know, I want to give you the opportunity.
Well, I'd like to thank the sponsors, Pizzaville. They've been great for us. And, Louis has been a great asset to the program. And I'd like to thank everybody, and hopefully we'll see you in September.
Yeah, wasn't there a song, Lou? See you in September? That sort of rings a bell from my youth. see you in September.
You're showing your age, Walt?
Yeah, well, that's at Zoom. You got to remember, it's Zoomer Radio, right? That there's a reason we're on this station.
You can pay to clear the track if you want.
that's gonna be our intro song next year. Clear the track. Here comes Shaq. Anyways, we only got a minute left, and Naz started on the fantastic at Pete. People at Pizzaville, the Contardi family, have been just amazing to us. I can't thank them enough. It's Naz and I come down Sunday mornings. This is a work of passion for us. We just enjoy doing this. We always have addressed this from the perspective of the fans. We're not journalists. We're having fun. We reflect how fans feel about sports, and that's always been our perspective. And for those listeners that, and we know a lot of you have been listening a long time, from the bottom of our hearts, we thank you. KPMG Enterprise, we thank you. Miller Thompson, we thank you. MDF Mechanical, we thank you. Lou, as Naz said, I can't thank you enough. Listeners, Zoomer Radio, Naz, last word.
See you in September.
Awesome. To all our listeners, have a fantastic rest of the weekend, and we'll see you in September.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.